Chapter 28. D. Will you not make me a prisoner? W. I will be thy surety, body for body, but thou shalt be a free man, and go whither thou wilt, though I own to thee, thou dost not deserve it. Just at this time our ship fired 3 guns to answer the sloop, and let her know we saw her, who immediately, we perceived, understood it, and stood directly for the place. But it is impossible to express the confusion and filthy vile noise, the hurry and universal disorder, that was among that vast multitude of people upon our firing off 3 guns. They immediately all repaired to their arms, as I may call it, for to say they put themselves into order would be saying nothing. Upon the word of command, then, they advanced all in a body to the seaside, and resolving to give us 1 volley of their firearms, for such they were, immediately they saluted us with 100,000 of their fire arrows, every one carrying a little bag of cloth dipped in brimstone, or some such thing, which, flying through the air, had nothing to hinder it taking fire as it flew, and it generally did so. I cannot say, but this method of attacking us, by a way we had no notion of, might give us at first some little surprise, for the number was so great at first, that we were not altogether without apprehensions, that they might unluckily set our ship on fire, so that William resolved immediately to row on board, and persuade us all to weigh, and stand out to sea. But there was no time for it, for they immediately let fly a volley at the boat, and at the ship, from all parts of the vast crowd of people which stood near the shore. Nor did they fire, as I may call it, all at once, and so leave off. But their arrows being soon notched upon their bows, they kept continually shooting, so that the air was full of flame. I could not say, whether they set their cotton rag on fire, before they shot the arrow, for I did not perceive they had fire with them, which, however, it seems they had. The arrow, besides the fire it carried with it, had a head, or a peg, as we call it, of bone, and some of sharp flint stone, and some few of a metal, too soft in itself for metal, but hard enough to cause it to enter, if it were a plank, so as to stick where it fell. William and his men had notice sufficient to lie close behind their wasteboards, which, for this very purpose, they had made so high, that they could easily sink themselves behind them, so as to defend themselves from anything that came point-blank, as we call it, or upon a line. But for what might fall perpendicularly out of the air they had no guard, but took the hazard of that. At first they made, as if they would row away, but before they went they gave a volley of their firearms, firing at those which stood with the Dutchmen. But William ordered them to be sure to take their aim at others, so as to miss him, and they did so. There was no calling to them now, for the noise was so great among them, that they could hear nobody, but our men boldly rowed in nearer to them, for they were at first driven a little off, and when they came nearer, they fired a second volley, which put the fellows into great confusion, and we could see from the ship, that several of them were killed or wounded. We thought this was a very unequal fight, and therefore we made a signal to our men to row away, that we might have a little of the sport as well as they. But the arrows flew so thick upon them, being so near the shore, that they could not sit to their oars, so they spread a little of their sail, thinking they might sail along the shore, and lie behind their wasteboard. But the sail had not been spread 6 minutes till it had 500 fire arrows shot into it and through it, and at length, set it fairly on fire. Nor were our men quite out of the danger of its setting the boat on fire, and this made them paddle and shove the boat away as well as they could, as they lay, to get farther off. By this time they had left us a fair mark at the whole savage army, and as we had sheered the ship, as near to them as we could, we fired among the thickest of them 6 or 7 times, 5 guns at a time, with shot, old iron, musket bullets, and see, we could easily see, that we made havoc among them, and killed and wounded abundance of them, and that they were in a great surprise at it, but yet they never offered to stir, and all this, while their fire arrows flew as thick as before. At last, on a sudden their arrows stopped, and the old Dutchman came running down to the waterside all alone, with his white flag, as before, waving it as high as he could, and making signals to our boat to come to him again. William did not care at first to go near him, but the man continuing to make signals to him to come, at last William went. And the Dutchman told him that he had been with the general, who was much mollified by the slaughter of his men, and that now he could have anything of him. Anything, says William. What have we to do with him? Let him go about his business, and carry his men out of gunshot, can't he? Why, says the Dutchman, but he dares not stir, nor see the king's face. Unless some of your men come on shore, he will certainly put him to death. Why, then, says William, he is a dead man, for if it were to save his life, and the lives of all the crowd that is with him, he shall never have one of us in his power. But I'll tell thee, said William, how thou shalt cheat him, and gain thy own liberty too, if thou hast any mind, to see thy own country again, and art not turned savage, and grown fond of living all thy days among heathens and savages. I would be glad to do it with all my heart, says he, but if I should offer to swim off to you now, though they are so far from me, they shoot so true, that they would kill me before I got halfway. But, says William, I'll tell thee how thou shalt come with his consent. Go to him, and tell him I have offered to carry you on board, to try if you could persuade the captain to come on shore, and that I would not hinder him if he was willing to venture. The Dutchman seemed in a rapture at the very first word. I'll do it, says he. I am persuaded he will give me leave to come. Away he runs, as if he had a glad message to carry, and tells the general that William had promised, if he would go on board the ship with him, he would persuade the captain to return with him. The general was fool enough to give him orders to go, and charged him not to come back without the captain, which he readily promised, and very honestly might. So they took him in, and brought him on board, and he was as good as his word to them, for he never went back to them any more. And the sloop being come to the mouth of the inlet where we lay, we weighed and set sail. But, as we went out, being pretty near the shore, we fired 3 guns, as it were among them, but without any shot, for it was of no use to us to hurt any more of them. After we had fired, we gave them a cheer, as the seamen call it, that is to say, we hallooed at them, by way of triumph, and so carried off their ambassador. How it fared with their general, we know nothing of that. This passage, when I related it to a friend of mine, after my return from those rambles, agreed so well with his relation of what happened to one Mr. Knox, an English captain, who some time ago was decoyed on shore by these people, that it could not but be very much to my satisfaction to think what mischief we had all escaped, and I think it cannot but be very profitable to record the other story, which is but short, with my own, to show whoever reads this what it was I avoided, and prevent their falling into the like, if they have to do with the perfidious people of Ceylon. The relation is as follows. The island of Ceylon being inhabited for the greatest part by barbarians, which will not allow any trade or commerce with any European nation, and inaccessible by any travelers, it will be convenient to relate the occasion how the author of this story happened to go into this island, and what opportunities he had of being fully acquainted with the people, their laws and customs, that so we may the better depend upon the account, and value it as it deserves, for the rarity as well as the truth of it. And both these the author gives us a brief relation of in this manner. His words are as follows. In the year 1657, the Anne Frigate, of London, Captain Robert Knox, commander, on the 21st day of January, set sail out of the Downs, in the service of the Honorable East India Company of England, bound for Fort St. George, upon the coast of Coromandel, to trade for 1 year from port to port in India, which having performed, as he was lading his goods to return for England, Being in the road of Masulipatam, on the 19th of November 1659 there happened such a mighty storm, that in it several ships were cast away, and he was forced to cut his mainmast by the board, which so disabled the ship, that he could not proceed in his voyage. Whereupon Cottier, in the island of Ceylon, being a very commodious bay, fit for her present distress, Thomas Chambers Esquire, since Sir Thomas Chambers, the agent at Fort Street George, ordered that the ship should take in some cloth and India merchants belonging to Porto Novo, who might trade there, while she lay to set her mast, and repair the other damages sustained by the storm. At her first coming thither, after the Indian merchants were set ashore, the captain and his men were very jealous of the people of that place, by reason the English never had any commerce or dealing with them. But after they had been there 20 days, going ashore and returning again at pleasure, without any molestation, they began to lay aside all suspicious thoughts of the people that dwelt thereabouts, who had kindly entertained them for their money. By this time the king of the country had notice of their arrival, and, not being acquainted with their intents, he sent down a de Sava, or general, with an army, to them, who immediately sent a messenger to the captain on board, to desire him to come ashore to him, pretending a letter from the king. The captain saluted the message with firing of guns, and ordered his son, Robert Knox, and Mr. John Loveland, merchant of the ship, to go ashore, and wait on him. When they were come before him, he demanded who they were, and how long they should stay. They told him they were Englishmen, and not to stay above 20 or 30 days, and desired permission to trade in His Majesty's port. His answer was, that the king was glad to hear the English were come into his country, and had commanded him to assist them as they should desire, and had sent a letter, to be delivered to none, but the captain himself. They were then 12 miles from the seaside, and therefore replied, that the captain could not leave his ship to come so far, but if he pleased to go down to the seaside, the captain would wait on him to receive the letter. Whereupon the de Sava desired them to stay that day, and on the morrow he would go with them, which, rather than displease him in so small a matter, they consented to. In the evening the de Sava sent a present to the captain of cattle and fruits, and sea which, being carried all night by the messengers, was delivered to him in the morning, who told him withal, that his men were coming down with the de Sava, and desired his company on shore against his coming, having a letter from the king, to deliver into his own hand. The captain, mistrusting nothing, came on shore with his boat, and, sitting under a tamarind tree, waited for the de Sava. In the meantime the native soldiers privately surrounded him, and the 7 men he had with him, and seizing them, carried them to meet the de Sava, bearing the captain on a hammock on their shoulders. The next day the longboat's crew, not knowing what had happened, came on shore to cut down a tree, to make cheeks for the mainmast, and were made prisoners after the same manner, though with more violence, because they were more rough with them, and made resistance. Yet they were not brought to the captain and his company, but quartered in another house in the same town. The de Sava having thus gotten 2 boats and 18 men, his next care was to gain the ship, and to that end, telling the captain, that he and his men were only detained, because the king intended to send letters, and a present to the English nation by him, desired he would send some men on board his ship, to order her to stay, and because the ship was in danger of being fired by the Dutch, if she stayed long in the bay, to bring her up the river. The captain did not approve of the advice, but did not dare to own his dislike, so he sent his son with the order, but with a solemn conjuration to return again, which he accordingly did, bringing a letter from the company in the ship, that they would not obey the captain, nor any other, in this matter, but were resolved to stand on their own defense. This letter satisfied the de Sava, who thereupon gave the captain leave to write for what he would have brought from the ship, pretending that he had not the king's order to release them, though it would suddenly come. The captain, seeing he was held in suspense, and the season of the year spending for the ship, to proceed on her voyage to some place, sent order to Mr. John Burford, the chief mate, to take charge of the ship, and set sail to Porto Novo, from whence they came, and there to follow the agent's order. And now began that long and sad captivity they all along feared. The ship being gone, the de Sava was called up to the king, and they were kept under guards a while, till a special order came from the king to part them, and put one in a town, for the conveniency of their maintenance, which the king ordered to be at the charge of the country. On September 16, 1660, the captain and his son were placed in a town called Bonder Coswat, in the country of Hot Curly Hilaris Coral, distant from the city of Candy northward 30 miles, and from the rest of the English a full day's journey. Here they had their provisions brought them twice a day, without money, as much as they could eat, and as good as the country yielded. The situation of the place was very pleasant and commodious, but that year, that part of the land was very sickly by agues and fevers, of which many died. The captain and his son after some time were visited with the common distemper, and the captain, being also loaded with grief for his deplorable condition, languished more than 3 months, and then died, February 9, 1661. Robert Knox, his son, was now left desolate, sick, and in captivity, having none to comfort him but God, who is the father of the fatherless, and hears the groans of such as are in captivity, being alone to enter upon a long scene of misery and calamity. Oppressed with weakness of body and grief of soul for the loss of his father, and the remediless trouble that he was like to endure, and the first instance of it was in the burial of his father, for he sent his black boy to the people of the town, to desire their assistance, because they understood not their language, but they sent him only a rope, to drag him by the neck into the woods, and told him that they would offer him no other help, unless he would pay for it. This barbarous answer increased his trouble for his father's death, that now he was like to lie unburied, and be made a prey to the wild beasts in the woods, for the ground was very hard, and they had not tools to dig with, and so it was impossible for them to bury him, and having a small matter of money left him, viz. A pagoda and a gold ring, he hired a man, and so buried him in as decent a manner as their condition would permit. His dead father being thus removed out of his sight, but his ague continuing, he was reduced very low, partly by sorrow and partly by his disease. All the comfort he had was to go into the wood and fields with a book, either the Practice of Piety or Mr. Rogers' Seven Treatises, which were the only two books he had, and meditate and read, and sometimes pray, in which his anguish made him often invert Elijah's petition, that he might die, because his life was a burden to him. God, though he was pleased to prolong his life, yet he found a way to lighten his grief, by removing his ague, and granting him a desire which above all things, was acceptable to him. He had read his two books over so often, that he had both almost by heart, and though they were both pious and good writings, yet he longed for the truth from the original fountain, and thought it his greatest unhappiness, that he had not a Bible, and did believe that he should never see one again. But, contrary to his expectation, God brought him one after this manner. As he was fishing one day with his black boy, to catch some fish to relieve his hunger, an old man passed by them, and asked his boy whether his master could read. And when the boy had answered yes, he told him that he had gotten a book from the Portuguese when they left Colombo, and, if his master pleased, he would sell it him. The boy told his master, who bade him go and see what book it was. The boy, having served the English some time, knew the book, and as soon as he got it into his hand, came running to him, calling out before he came to him, "It is the Bible." The words startled him, and he flung down his angle to meet him, and, finding it was true, was mightily rejoiced to see it, but he was afraid he should not have enough to purchase it, though he was resolved to part with all the money he had, which was but one pagoda, to buy it. But as Black Boy persuading him to slight it, and leave it to him to buy it, he at length obtained it for a knit cap. This accident he could not but look upon as a great miracle, that God should bestow upon him such an extraordinary blessing, and bring him a Bible in his own native language, in such a remote part of the world, where his name was not known, and where it was never heard of, that an Englishman had ever been before. The enjoyment of this mercy was a great comfort to him in captivity, and though he wanted no bodily convenience that the country did afford, for the king, immediately after his father's death, had sent an express order to the people of the towns that they should be kind to him and give him good victuals. And after he had been some time in the country and understood the language, he got him good conveniences, as a house and gardens, and falling to husbandry, God so prospered him that he had plenty, not only for himself, but to lend others, which being, according to the custom of the country, at 50% a year, much. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.